He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
We're losing community from places. Some people have better connection with their barista or with their publican than they do with some people in their family. Yeah. That's both funny and scary, right? So if you lose that daily connection, that 10 minutes that's really important to you when you go and get your coffee before you go into that meeting of that job that you don't really like that much, like, but that makes your day better. If that's not there anymore, like, that's a big problem that we need to think about. Mm-hmm. You know, what replaces that?
Welcome to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast where we discuss all things hospitality, hotels, and business. You can find us online at slicktalkthepodcast.com and on every podcast listening platform.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is a interesting and very exciting bonus podcast episode. Me and my friend Sean, who is based out in Australia, he is a podcast host of Open Pantry Consulting Podcast, or Open Pantry Podcast. And then he also obviously owns his own business out in Melbourne, Australia. The guy has been just, you know, deep in the food and restaurant hospitality space for over 20 years. And I was really excited to get to talk to him. He and I have a lot of mutual connections that have been on both of our podcasts, such as Adam Knight, Josh Kopel, and a few others. But this episode was super unique. He and I got to dive into what we have been seeing on different markets, of course, you know, United States versus Australia. And of course, you know, hospitality on the hotel and accommodation side, as well as hospitality in the restaurant, cafe, bakery scene and in Australia. So this is really exciting. We got to dive in really deep. This episode is cross-promoted, so it's not only on my show, but it's also on his. So that's why you'll hear us kind of banter back and forth a little bit, going into each other's stories and backgrounds and kind of ideas and maybe some concerns with the current state of the industry or where the industry will go after COVID-19. So it's just a lot of fun stuff. Like, literally, I just geeked out on this episode with him. And we've been talking for a little bit, but we definitely want to do more of this. So if you guys like this episode, there's no like agenda behind this. There's no outline, really. It's just two dudes that have a passion for what we do in the industry on two different sides of the world, and we are excited to have been able to chat. So we want to hear back from you guys. Let us know what you think of the episode being a cross promotion episode, both of us putting our ideas, thoughts, and maybe concerns or whatever, anything that's kind of out there to you guys. And so, yeah, again, check out all his information. I'll link it in the show notes. So please, please, please check out the show notes. You'll see all the stuff on how you can find out more about Sean, his podcast, as well as his business, and more on these topics that we're discussing. So thank you guys again for listening to me to ramble on about this, but this is a really cool episode. This is a bonus episode, and Sean was the perfect guy to have on. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And now back to the episode.
He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. I am your host, Will Slickers, and this is also another host of another podcast.
Hello.
We're doing two podcasts. This is Sean. He's based out in Australia, and he and I met through some mutual connections. I would say, you know, Josh Kopel, Adam Knight, mm-hmm. Tipsy Crew out in Australia. So it's really cool to see the hospitality network from all over the world really connect. And Sean, thanks for being on my show, and I'm excited to do this dual episode with you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being on mine. This is really cool. As you said, like our co-friends there, you know, Adam Knight, I did a co-show with the other week and it went really well. So that I was really, really comfortable to do this. And then in doing some prep for this podcast with you today, I listened to Josh's with you the other little bit, and God, it was good. And he's been on my show twice, and I thought, you know what, if I can be anywhere near as good as Josh, like, that's that's my ceiling today. That's what I'm looking for. So happy to be on board.
No, for sure. And that's the cool thing too, is that Josh has been on both of our shows twice. And it's like, man, this guy's just a killer. Like he knows what's up, like when it comes to the podcast world. And it's so funny, just the back end story of all that. So I'm excited, absolutely, man. This is going to be good. So I guess just to start into it, like, let's dive into a little bit about you, and then we'll just kind of go from there. Like, what's your background?
Yeah. So been in the hospitality industry for coming on 23 years. I'm a baker by trade. So started out as a baker's apprentice when I was 16. Mm-hmm. Worked with a big bakery retail group called Bakes Delight for 11 years, both as a baker, bakery manager, franchise partner. Owned two stores in my early 20s, which was woke me up really, really quick at the age of 21 buying a business. Had unfortunately a really bad car accident at high speed with a friend of mine at the age of 26, and lost it all and had to restart again. Decided to go into cafes. Didn't like it. Then I got a restaurant manager position with a QSR called Grilled, which is a pretty big brand here in Australia. So they've got about 120 odd locations around Australia.
Okay.
Funnily enough, one in Bali at the moment. But when I joined them sort of 2008, they only had about 10, 12 stores. So it was great to be part of their growth and open up a lot of stores with them in a couple of different states. If the people listening to your podcast, I've gone from living in Adelaide, South Australia, then I lived in Brisbane with Grilled, and then Perth. So I've gone all around the country. So a bit like living in LA, then living in New York, and then living in, you know, New Orleans or something.
Yeah.
And then I came to Melbourne about 5 years ago. Knew it was the sort of definitely the food capital of Australia. Although Sydney people tend to feel like Sydney is. And worked for a couple of different QSRs, ran a bakery, sourdough bakery brand when sourdough bread was really starting to kick goals here in Australia about 5 years ago. And that was great. Got to work with some really high level chefs supplying them bread sort of 6 days a week. Then what did I do? Then I started a consultancy business. I had a friend of a friend who was opening up a burger restaurant, and I decided to help out, and then decided to do that and help people open their businesses. Launched a fried chicken brand from Singapore in Australia, launched their three sites, did their end-to-end, so that was awesome. Then I worked for a dessert brand here in Australia called Sanchuro, which is obviously all about churros and about hot chocolate and things like that, all things Spanish. And then most recently before COVID, I was working for a salad brand called Laneway Greens, and Laneway Greens is a very close replication in some ways to Sweetgreen, and Dig and stuff like that in America, probably closer to Sweetgreen. But, then the pandemic hit and we lost the three sites that we had. And, after standing all our team down, I decided to stand myself down as well. And there we go. So yeah, during COVID, I've sort of just done a heap of podcasts and talked to a heap of people and see what the industry really needs now, which is a lot different. So it's good, yeah, man.
Yeah. No, I like the aspect, or the, I guess, new perspective on the show, because we always talk about hotels and we talked about restaurants, obviously, like with people like Josh and Michael Chernow, yeah, and a few others, but getting into like the cafe scene and the bakery scene and the other, I think like the other side of the desk, as I'd like to call it, you know, like I'm so used to the front, yeah, desk and being on that like back end of being on the other side. So it's kind of cool to bring this perspective to the show, and I'm excited to hear about the food side of hospitality a little bit more, even though I was a restaurant manager, yeah, and I, you know, I got to experience it a little bit, but not to the side of, or the scale of, kind of like what you've been, which is an extensive, yeah, good resume. So yeah. You definitely got the knowledge.
So what about you, Will? Because you come from a different sector of the industry, and I learned so much from like talking with, you know, our friend Adam Knight the other week about, you know, hotels and that kind of side and accommodation. Like, what about yourself? How did you start out? Like, how did you get to where you're at now?
Yeah. For the podcasters on my end that don't know my story or whatever, this is always fun to refresh. But started out in a failed chauffeur and event company that I started before Uber became really popular in a city that I just moved to. I moved there to be with just like kind of start overs. I was young, you know, I just got out of basic training in AIT for the Army. So I was, I was just like, you know, I'm going to go live with my best friend and go like start this like little adventure. And I did. And then Uber came really popular. So it was really hard to compete for, you know, something that was so instant and half, like not even half the price, like a fraction of the price of what you normally would get for like a chauffeur. Right. So, I opened it up and had it for a year to the exact day that I opened it a year later and I closed it.
Okay.
So
were you doing the driving?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was driving Yeah. I was doing wedding planning and I did a couple like concert events, Garth Brooks and Post Malone and a few other people like that. Yeah.
Wow.
It was cool. Like it had its perks, but it just, you know, there's so much overhead and I went into like big debt with it, just huge. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know the paperwork. I barely knew how to even get the vehicle like fully licensed and permitted. I had like the state come up to me like 5 times and be like, hey, you need to go redo this inspection and all this other stuff. It was like, there's a lot of hoops to jump through and I didn't know it. You know, you live and learn, right? So when I closed that, I started working at a hotel, 5-star Marriott Autograph Collection, which was independently owned and operated, but they got to carry the Marriott flag and the rewards program and all that type of stuff. And I just fell in love, man. Like walked in with a suit and tie for my chauffeur days that were like a day before and walked up to the manager and was like, hey, I picked up some guests that, you know, stayed here before when I was doing some chauffeuring stuff. And I really liked the look and the atmosphere of the place. And I want to see if you're hiring. And he interviewed me and I remember him going, so you have no experience in hotels? And I was like, nope, not one. He's like, how are you with people? And I was like, I love people. And he's like, how are you with like computer stuff? I'm like, I could be taught that. And he's like, okay, that's a good answer because I can't teach you people skills. Answer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, he and I are actually still like pretty much best friends to this day. I got my start in hotels and hospitality and I loved it. Moved to the Oregon coast to get more experience on the independent boutique side of things and started the podcast out of an entrepreneurial itch. And from there, after managing a couple other properties and working my way through the ranks, met my business partners for where I am at today with a luxury vacation rental management company here in the Pacific Northwest. And then quit my full-time job December 27th of 2019. And been podcasting and regretting it ever since. I'm just kidding. it was a bad time to quit for sure because of COVID, obviously, but no one can predict that. But, you know, we're still here. Still operating. Yeah.
It's like a good and a bad thing that some people will just know me for my podcasting now. It's like I do other things too. Like it's like, it's kind of a funny situation. Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question about your first, what was your first week like in hotels?
Dude, it was crazy. I remember, so this hotel was 716 rooms with 60,000 square foot of event space, room service, a fine dining restaurant, a tapas style restaurant with a bar and then a terrace bar upstairs. It was massive property. And my first week was the craziest thing. I think the first day was nice. It was like you get to go tour the place, you get to go look at rooms, you get to go meet people and kind of just like walk around and kind of get familiarized. But then like the second day, I remember the flood of check-ins. I think we had like 300 check-ins, which was nothing when you became like a pro. 300 was like an easy day, but like for my first or second day, I was like 300 check-ins, like holy crap. And there's a lot going on. So it was crazy, man. It was a crazy week. Like barely, I think I was on my third day, I started checking people in by myself. My manager just threw me in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was like, the second day, he was like, you do the computer stuff and I'll do the talking. And then the third day, he was like, all right, have fun. Do the talking and the computer stuff. And it was like, okay. And just threw me in to the wolves. Yeah. It was crazy.
Did that, Was that scary, or do you think, like, you know, like the throw in the deep end thing, like, is such a, you know, such a normal thing when you train people in hospitality? I'm sure people who've been in the industry sort of more than 15 plus years have been trained like that, or trained people like that. Like, did that scare you, or were you, like, excited by that?
That's something, yeah, I like that question, because I think it the industry, we see it. I think a lot of people, anybody who's listening, they probably had the same thing, right? They got thrown in. I know I did that when I was a restaurant manager. I was like, oh, you're a new waitress or server or whatever. There you go. I'm like, just go have fun. But no, I was terrified. Just because, you know, I'm the guy that, like, I want to make sure the team is good. Like, I don't want my team picking up any of my slack that I'm like, I hate messing up so much. And being the new guy, obviously you're going to mess up. And so I think I was on edge a little bit more than I normally would have, just because I knew my team was, like, really well, good at what they were doing. And they've been, you know, either at the property when it first opened or whatever. And I really wanted to make sure I did good for them. And then once I saw them kind of, like, they took me under their wing and were like, hey, this is what we do. This, like, watch me, how I say this or how I do that. And, that was just a lifesaver. So, like, the team really actually trained me and became, like, the go-to resource. And that was, like, probably the best part about it. And then I got excited, because then I would think, like, you know, when you see somebody, like, do something enough times, you start mimicking them a little bit. So I would pick up little things from every single one of them. And then it finally, like, created my own little, I guess, personality or my own style and flow of how I did things. And it got really comfortable. And then from there, I was able to clean it up and tighten it up and make sure that I was, like, doing it the way I should have been trained in the beginning, instead of just putting pieces and pieces together. If that makes sense. It's kind of it was the team aspect that really helped make it a lot better.
Yeah. It's super interesting, right? Like, I've been thinking in the last couple of months, as I've been looking at what I call, like, the unsexy things of hospitality that are really, really critically important, like the back of house stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are we going to train people? Like, one thing is, like, how the hell are we going to train people further on? Because it needs to be a lot more efficient. And because we need to save money. But, like, how are we going to do that and still have a meaningful connection? You know what I mean? Like, it's a tough
thing to think about. The last hotel that I was at, I was a front office and AGM. So we were 70 units, condominium. So all suites is, like, pretty much a condo apartment type hotel. So the rooms were a lot bigger than your standard room. We didn't have a restaurant on site, but we did, like, complimentary happy hour in the evening and continental breakfast. And one of my things, like, when I first started that, I was realizing, like, I got thrown into that position too, like the front office stuff with that hotel, like, right away, even though I had experience, like, I didn't get trained. So what I started doing with the other managers was, the housekeeping manager and the maintenance manager and I sat down and said, okay, I'm hiring this person. I want to create a training schedule, like a legit, they are not doing the actual job without somebody being there, but they're also in every department. So I want them to go make a couple beds and clean a couple of rooms. I want them to go learn how to fix a fireplace or, you know, do these, like, maintenance tasks that, you know, anybody can do, right? Like, learning how to just do something very simple, learn, like, the ins and outs of the room. And then I also want them to, like, learn front desk and, like, learn how to talk to a guest or, like, how to, you know, say my pleasure when somebody's saying, hey, you're doing a great job, instead of, oh yeah, anytime, you know, like, kind of just, like, add that extra little step, the little extra things. And so cross promoting, like, the top department staff was a huge success for that property specifically. I don't know why we never thought of it sooner, but for me, I really like that model of, like, all right, I want you to go clean a couple rooms for, like, 2 days, just go clean rooms and hop on the housekeeping team, or, you know, maybe help out in breakfast, or there's so many things. I think it adds the perspective of, I don't know if you ever see this in, like, the restaurant side, but, like, well, I'm just a server, or I'm just a busboy, or I'm just this. And then, so, like, that gives them the out of helping out the team
Yeah.
Or, you know, they don't understand like what one other person's going through while everyone else is just, you know, doing whatever. So I think it's kind of it gives that good understanding.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, I found like the bigger venues that I've worked in, there can be very much that like divide between back of house and front of house, and then in between the back of house and front of house, then the divides between the roles. And the best teams I've worked with and the best brands I've worked with, like, it's if I can put each staff member in different positions and make sure they understand what that position is like, then they're going to respect everyone else in the team a lot more, the actual brand a lot more, the job they do themselves, you know, notably more than any other day. It's just a really important part of training. It's a really important part of team culture and respect. Like, there's so many things that come from that. It's such a simple move, but so many things that come from that.
For sure. And I like to use the analogy of a stained glass window. I think if for visual people, like if you're a visual person, just imagine a stained glass window, right? And if you are that one piece of glass in the middle, you look at it but close, you're like, oh, it's just one little piece of glass, whatever is there. But you step back and the further and further back you get, you start to see how it forms a picture, right? So imagine every little piece of glass is a different role or a different type of duty that role plays in the big picture of things. I think a lot of people, when they get to experience each piece of glass, so to say, they kind of step back further and further and see the bigger picture. And that really could, like, that can make and break, I think, companies in the sense of guest experience and, of course, turnover rates on staff and everything like that. That's always a good visual for me, especially with new managers. I think they kind of like get so stuck into, well, I'm the manager now, so I got to go do this and I got to go da da da. So you got to step back and look at all the pieces, my friend. Understand everyone's role is different, has different effects on that bigger picture. Will save you a headache and a lot of sleepless nights.
I think the biggest thing you learn is, like a manager, when you're managing different departments, is the fact that what you've really become is a manager, just a pure manager of people, and making sure that you're managing culture. You're not managing systems as much. You're overlooking over systems, but you're managing the culture of those systems actually being executed. So it's a really important learning. One you don't realize until you're in it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, I kind of want to get into a little bit for the audience sake on leading moments for you. Mm-hmm. I think like that kind of going into, Open Pantry and what you do, but then also, I want to kind of understand, because, you know, you and I are also in completely different markets and different sides of the spectrum of hospitality. So it's kind of cool, but like, what was the previous state, you know, pre-COVID of the industry on your end, like from what you saw before everything happened and like while you were doing this, you know, adventure with Open Pantry and all that good stuff. And I'm kind of just, I want your perspective.
So I think it's been interesting, right? Because I've been lucky enough to like do the podcast for like the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that when I did it, that it was Melbourne centric in the fact that we really talked about food and culture and all that kind of thing really deep that are important to our industry. But I wanted to make sure that I was talking to different people around the world, because in that if we can learn from other people's markets, then we can really learn what we can do with ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what I learned, especially after COVID a lot more, was the fact that, and before COVID, was the fact that the industries, whether it be the UK, the US, Canada, throughout Asia, had a lot of similarities in the fact that the hospitality industry was largely overdeveloped. There was too many sites, too many brands, poor lease deals, people were paying too much per square foot, per square meter.
Yeah.
There were a lot of what I call vanilla brands, which means they didn't really stand for anything. There was a lot of private equity in hospitality, which meant it really became about the dollars a lot more and the amount of sites that you could roll out. So it became much more about ego and not really thinking about how we plan out the business. So I think it was just a ticking time bomb waiting to happen, and COVID was that thing that happened because we just had, you know, a perfect storm of, you know, too many brands, not enough people to support those brands, not able to get the talent that we need to execute consistently, and you know, unprofitable businesses all over the place. And, you know, that's where, you know, that's where we're going to see a closure rate in Australia, probably somewhere of arguably of 30 to 40%. I think when we sort of have most of the government assistance finish in March next year. So luckily we've got government assistance till March next year in some way, shape or form for most staff. And, you know, I know that, you know, Josh has talked about, you know, 60 to 70% closure rate in America, which is scary because, you know, as I've said to, you know, so many of my friends in the US and UK, like, especially with independent cafes and restaurants and that kind of thing, like, this is community.
Mm-hmm.
We're losing community from places. Some people have better connection with their barista or with their publican than they do with some people in their family. I mean, that's both funny and scary, right? So if you lose that daily connection, that 10 minutes that's really important to you when you go and get your coffee before you go into that meeting of that job that you don't really like that much, like, but that makes your day better. If that's not there anymore, like, that's a big problem that we need to think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what replaces that? So I think, I mean, with regards with what I do with Open Pantry, like, it's around operational consulting, right? So it's around, you know, everything that moves and shakes a brand every day, like, that's what I can consult on. I can make sure that a brand can open with the proper supply chain or the proper systems and processes or recruit the right people. And, you know, as I cheekily said before, like, I'm looking at all the unsexy things at the moment in hospitality and making sure that we can do them properly on the other side of this, because they're important to make sure we can execute cafes, restaurants, bars a lot better. So things like food safety, things like training, things like HR and recruitment and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah
man, it was to answer your question really simply, it was going to happen. It was just a matter of what was going to tip it, and COVID tipped it. So
I was going to say, I think, like, a few things that kind of came to mind when you said all that, like, the community thing really struck a chord, and I'll go a little in on that. But also you're talking about, you know, cleaning procedures and, like, you know, all these other things, like better trainings and, like, these, like, what next steps, right? The moving forward. But man, like, to me, I just, like, it comes back. The more I've been thinking about this, like, since, you know, January, February, March, it just comes back to being more intentional as, like, an industry. And you and I also kind of talked about this about, you know, what, last week when we did our little chat, and, you know, like, I don't know. I just keep seeing, like, in the American market, just, you know, we have so many soft brands under, you know, IHG or Best Western or Marriott or Hilton. Like, there's so many soft brands you can't even tell. And, like you were saying, you know, it's oversaturated market. I'm, like, with all those, like, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of Marriott. I'm a big fan of, like, the bigger hotel property, like, you know, spirit. But at the end of the day, like, I just feel like we've gotten so unintentional with things. We just kind of, this is now cookie cutter. This is now the, you know, we're just set. We settled for little, if that makes sense. But we tell our staff
for just enough.
Yeah, exactly. Just enough. And we tell our staff to go above and beyond. But as, like, an industry itself, we just kind of set the tone very low. And that's just from, like, that's what I've been thinking about. Like, this is, like, this is what keeps me up at night. And I'm just like, we became so unintentional. And we also kind of talked about this in our pre-chat. Like, I'm
fearful, like even with restaurants too, because, or cafes or anything, because with the mask involvement and gloves and face shields and all this other stuff, you know, like, don't get me wrong, we have to protect each other if that's what that means, and that's what that means. But not being able to see a smile, not being able to understand the body language better, not being able to do basic human to human interactions that show we are being intentional as a team or a staff or a property, that is what, like, really, like, again, keeps me up at night. Like, just because I think of all these things that, but, and again, this is like not to be negative for any of the listeners. This is just stuff being that, real. Yeah, it's being real. Like, it's, I, like you said, I've had those moments with, like, my barista guy or girl, like, that you form a connection with, and not being able to see them as, like, damn, I hope they're okay. Cause then, you know, like, you know, their kids, you know, their house, or, you know, like, you know, like, stuff about their life. And you, that, like, runs through my head. I don't know. Maybe you and I are the weirdos in the world that, like, think, like, that think about, like, the, you know, we are relationship based. Like, I love knowing about people and, like, what they do. And so, like, that does go through my mind, like a bartender, or, like, even one of my own old friends who's was a director of marketing for a hotel is now, you know, like, I think about her dogs. I'm like, oh, she's got all these dogs. Like, and I'm like, I hope they're okay. Like, with all this, like, I don't know, she's working. Like, you know, I'm just, there's all these things that go through our head. So I don't know, man. Like, that's what kind of is going through my thoughts of this, like, whole COVID world. And go ahead.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen in regards with accommodation in the short term, in the space that you play? Because, you know, you said such amazing things there around body language and masks and all that kind of stuff. The stuff that I'm worried about for hospitality, because I think, you know, once we get a vaccine, and once we can distribute that vaccine, and once everyone is quote unquote better and not as worried and don't have to wear masks and all this kind of stuff, then we're going to go to a point where we're like, oh my God, I can't believe it's so fantastic. Like, it's amazing. And we're going to think about those moments a lot in a lot better way. And we're going to be much more thankful for those moments. And then we'll go through another cycle where we probably won't care about it as much, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Again. But, like, in this real part now, like, what, how do you think accommodation venues can continue to make those moments? Like, it's so much influence on people interactions.
Yeah, well, because, like, it goes into, like, another side of the scale too, and this is, like, I know where you geek out, and it's like the operation costs and, like, the streamlining. Like, now that we've gone to this level, I think COVID has really sped up, like, this, like, shift in the industry of, like, catching up with, like, tech and modernizing, like, how we do things, and, you know, all this other stuff. Even with, restaurants and hotels, you know, now that we're finally catching up, I'm worried that, you know, maybe we're not streamlining too much, but that we are, it's becoming more transactional. And so for me, with, like, what can we do, like, to keep that human, like, intention of body language and eye contact, and, that's a part that I just think, you know, we're gonna have to get creative. That's just, like, we have no choice. Like, the moment we lose that part of our, like, we take away all the staff and we go to robots or whatever, like, you know, like, if the big extremes, but, like, this is the steps towards those, is that if you take away front desk and you only have housekeeping and maintenance staff that normally will be behind the scenes and doesn't really help check in guests or take their luggage or, you know, drop a plate on their table, we're just a transaction industry now. And so, I don't know. I just am in that, like, weird, I don't even know. It's
a weird headspace, right?
Yeah.
Do you think there's an opportunity? Like, because we've both just talked about how both our industries in some respects were doing just enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much competition. So many coffee brands were doing just enough. Maybe some hotel chains were doing just enough. But if you if you then had this paradigm in hotels and accommodation that if you pay, if you want someone to greet you and talk to you face to face at a hotel and check you in and be a personal concierge and know the places because you don't like tech, you want someone to tell you that, and you want the turn down service and all the amenities and all that stuff, you'll pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
Then there'll be this middle ground, which will be like automatic check-in, don't talk to anyone. You see some maintenance staff going around the place, but otherwise it feels like you're in a big freaking house.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And then you just have lower grade, which is just cheaper and, you know, probably,
yeah,
you know, is always going to be there, right? For transactional stuff. So do you think that's where it's going to land, or?
Well, I like the question of opportunity, just because, you know, Josh Koppel said this like many times, was that all these restaurants turn to curbside and delivery pickup, right? He said with Pru and Proper, he was not. He wanted to wait it out until somebody came up with something that was working and didn't accept. He wasn't accepting the low pay, you know, the high hours, the quality of everything. So I think what this is opening up is the opportunity for the industry to become flex. And when I say flex, like flexible as in being so intentional with how they communicate their brand, like where, hey, we are this brand, we are going to be, you know, we will be there to open the door for you, to grab your bag, to greet you with a smile, that type of brand, where the guests can choose that as their choice, or they're going to be so intentional. Like this is for you, like vacation rentals is a great example of this. Vacation rentals don't have that, you know, front desk type of meet and greet experience. It's very much automated processes and systems and via phones and emails and other things like that, right? You get a door code, you check in at 3 p.m. or whatever the time is, and that's it. You have the whole place to yourself. You never see anybody. Now we got to apply that to, you know, marketing and communication and being intentional and knowing your market. Like this is, if you are a person who likes to be greeted and likes to talk to the front desk staff or the bar or, you know, your server, this is not the place for you. Like we don't have that. We don't offer it. This is for people that are very much like, this is where, again, kind of my opinion, just on the intention, being intentional on how we do that. And then you shape your business back end structure, streamlines, all that other stuff accordingly to that. You don't become like this big luxury concierge brand, but have everything automated and copied and pasted into a software or whatever. Like you, this is where the human interaction comes versus if you're an automated company, you don't start randomly placing people at properties and have them like pop out of the bushes and be like, hey, Mr. Smith, like we're glad you're here. But, like super extreme.
It would be cool though.
It would be great. But it's just, I think it comes back to intention. Like that'll be my word of this whole episode, just intention.
I think that's such a good point, Will. Like sometimes I think we need to look backward to look forward. And I like to reverse engineer a lot of things in order to make sense of what strategy wise I'm going to do next. Whether that be if I'm working with brands, I'm working with, you know, my own brand or different projects and stuff. Like, how do you think it got to a point where a lot of hotels and accommodation services were doing much the same stuff with a different logo, you know, or a different
scalability? Scalability. Right. If they weren't able to scale so fast, I don't think it would have happened so fast. Like, I don't think we would have so many soft brands, right? But when, I'm not an expert on the back end of like bank loans and other stuff like that and where people get their money. Like, that's like not my expertise, but I think the, you know, with companies, you take Marriott, very innovative. Like they were the leaders, you know, back in the day. And they still are, obviously, like in a lot of aspects. But like you think about when Marriott and Hilton were going back and forth constantly, you know, in like the 80s and 90s. And, you know, they would do one thing and then all of a sudden they'd be all over the news. And then Hilton would try to do another thing and it would be all over the news. And, you know, it was like that one up step. And that, like, was needed. I think it was great. You know, I think that really drove the hospitality industry and got a lot of people invested into the space, because it is a pretty, like, as big as it is, it's a small industry. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing the podcast almost 3 years, and you've been doing your podcast about the same. And here we are in America and Australia talking to each other. You know, so like I think that was needed, the competition, but then it got just so blown that they're like, we're going to do this, this, this. And then, you know, it wasn't a competition anymore. It's just, how can we scale? How can we get the revenue in from each type of property? How can we cater to every guest or market or whatever? And when they scaled that big, that's, you know, then you look 20 years down the road. All right. They scaled to X amount of properties and brands that, now it's just confusing. You know, there's new generations of travelers. There's new this and new that and new this and new that. And then in my head, it just becomes, it was just scaled way quick.
It's interesting. It's interesting when a lot of money gets involved. And what I like to say is, like, you know, too many old white guys are making too many decisions in brands, right? And I've been much more open about saying that as I've reflected on my career. And, but like what I'm noticing at the moment, as we're dealing with, like, wherever it is in the world is having the same conversation. Like, we're in a, like here in Melbourne, we're in this harsh lockdown at the moment where, like, we're just doing takeout delivery for hospitality venues, like, all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, the people who have the loudest voice at the moment, who are talking about opening back up, even in a potentially unsafe environment, are the people who have the most money on the line. And the ones that, you know, who have scaled these big brands, whether they've been hotels or accommodation or other sectors of the community, they just want things to go back to normal so they can trade again because they've got so much money on the line. They don't you know, the health aspect is put to the side a bit. Whether, you know, the smaller people, like, they obviously want things to open up again. Like, don't get me wrong, but their voice is a bit different. You know, they're thinking about their businesses a bit different. Are you seeing the same in the US, or do you think it's just an Australian centric thing here?
Well, I was going to ask you the same thing on restaurant side of stuff. Like, like, cause I'm talking Marriott and Hilton and all this other stuff, and scalability, but are you seeing, like, I'll answer your question, but I want to know, like, on the restaurant side, because I don't know, like, I couldn't, other than, like, fast food places like McDonald's or whatever, because that's what all we have in America is fast food, fat options, those scale. But, like, I'm, like, on the restaurant, like, the genuine sit-down, real good food. Are you guys seeing anything like that? Like, is that what's been your perspective with food in general, like food service?
As in, like, how it's going to get out of this mess, or like what people are saying right now?
Yeah, get out of this mess, and maybe what opportunity is ahead?
I think a lot of restaurateurs have come to the decision that they know that an omni-channel business is the way forward, in that dine-in will be a lesser part of their revenue. And they need to care about delivery and takeout more than they ever have before. Because you've got so many brands that never do takeout delivery. Freaking hate it. Hate Uber. Hate every delivery platform. You know, we've seen some high scale delivery come here with, you know, premium brands who are doing that and doing takeout and doing, you know, finish at home packs and that kind of stuff. So you're seeing that happen. But I'm scared that you're seeing a lot of hoteliers who are, restaurateurs who are, you know, been in the industry for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, who are just like, I don't know if I can ride this out. Like,
do you think we overcomplicated it?
Yeah, most definitely. Like, when you think about the amount of regulation that happens in a business like hospitality, whether that be in hotels or whether that be in restaurants or cafes, especially restaurants. So when you add a liquor license to anything, it becomes incredibly hard. You know, we're close to being as regulated as the banking industry. Like, you're dealing with food, which can kill people. You're dealing with liquor that can, you know, hurt people. you know, you have to worry about when people leave your venue if you're dealing with liquor. Like, you've got massive insurance if people try and sue you. Like, it's just, it's just overcomplicated. And you've got every government involved. You've got the council involved, local council. You've got the state governments involved, and you've got the federal government involved. And then the last, you know, 5 years, you've got third party, whatever, whether they'd be delivery apps, whether they'd be booking platforms, whether they'd be other services that are supposed to save us money, actually taking money away. And you go, what the hell are we doing?
We're charging this much and we're only getting this much when originally, like, I think of the same thing, like all the OTAs or like delivery apps and all these other like commission based platforms are able to enhance the business, right?
Yes.
They enhance it because you're doing more sales, but you're still paying off paying out the ass for the rest of it. You know,
absolutely. Especially,
so it's like really your margins look like they're going up, but they're not really going up. So
correct.
We're going off like false numbers. And this is another topic we always talk about, like, you know, profitability. I think we saw a lot of people the first 3 weeks of COVID just go out of business. Like, didn't they just get like Series E funding from this? It's like, what? How did they get like billions of dollars and now they're out of business 3 weeks later and the CEO is not to be heard of or ever found?
Yeah.
That gets into like a whole other window. Like, did we overcomplicate the industry in overdeveloping that stuff? Like, because little people can't survive off of, if you're having 15%, 20% go out to Uber Eats, and then you have Grubhub, and then you have this, and then you have your staff and your overhead costs, and then the way too overpriced of rent on the building, and then the cost of goods, and where's the real profit?
Yeah. And like, you see my pause? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I mean, our wage cost here is high. We pay superannuation and that kind of stuff. I know with most of brands, the US still pay health insurance and stuff. That's different here in Australia, but like there's equal costs and, people always like to talk about what their top line revenue is, but they don't talk about their profitability.
Yeah. Top line means nothing to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how much are you taking home?
And
how much are you taking home after tax?
Exactly. That's the big question. Yeah, because like whenever I'd be in revenue meetings, we'd get like the star report and we'd have all like, oh, we were number one out of our competition in RevPAR and ADR and all these other things, right? They're talking about revenue. I'm like, yeah, RevPAR is good. We're number one out of the 10 people that we've set our competition up, but it costs us $65 to clean a room and our RevPAR was 53. What? How is that good?
I can raise your revenue. I can just incrementally make your pricing more.
Exactly.
It's stupid. Like, how much money are we taking home? Like, when I first started out in business world, or when I first started out working, like my boss at sort of 16 said to me, we're not here to make friends, Sean. We're here to make money. Hopefully the success from making money allows us to make more friends and change the industry. But at first we have to make money.
Yeah.
It's
hard. The struggle. Like, I was gonna say that's the struggle with hospitality though. It's like if you go to any other business, let's say you go to a different industry like the ironworking industry, right?
Yes.
They don't give a crap about what your daughter did last week for football or basketball or anything like that. They're there to make the deal. Like they don't, but like hospitality, like we're people that like, get into that friendship space really quick. Like we've been talking about. So, and then you add money to it. And it's like, anytime, your friends and you like involve money, it's like, hey man, I got you this time. And like, no, I got you. It gets a little complicated and people get want to step on each other's toes. And so now you've paid $300 worth of your friend's event stuff and he hasn't paid you back or maybe whatever, or you undercharged. And so what I'm trying to say is like, I think it's harder for our space than it is to make money, but be friends, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I've seen, so many friendships broken from like what I call the nightclub factor. Right. So like notoriously, like, 4 or 5 guys will get together who are in like finance or accounting or banking or some other industry, right? Some other industry that isn't hospitality. And they'll go, you know what? We eat out. We go to brunch. We go to, you know, we go out with our girlfriends or partners and boyfriends. Yeah. And let's open a venue. Mm-hmm. Let's open a venue because it looks easy. And they'll all pull in $100,000 each, you know, so they've got a half a million dollar spend. And then they go open a venue. Like it's just, and then they lose their money in 18 months. Like it just, it's, so I'm glad that hopefully that's going to stop, you know, but it's going to be an interesting time, man. Like what do you think is going to happen to like accommodation? Like, do you think like what you're doing is going to, with vacation rentals is going to like explode and do a lot better because it's just going to be more fragmented now, like post COVID.
Yeah. We're already seeing that, man. Like hotel markets are just, you know, there's a lot, like I can say majority, you know, like the bigger brands, the ones that kind of like lead the, they get covered a lot in the spotlight of media and stuff. You know, they're still not open. I just talked to a guy that's going to be on the show later this month or later next month. And their hotel isn't scheduled to open up again until 2021. They're still closed. And so, but like vacation rentals were popping, you know, everyone, there's just, it became, I think, you know, obviously like Airbnb and all these other like OTAs kind of opened up that outlet and that floodgate a little bit more. We're seeing a lot of driving, you know, destinations become very popular. Obviously with, you know, borders being closed and stuff like that. But, with my concern, or not like concern, but like going into the hotel space, I'm hoping, really, really, really am, because I've never been a hotels versus vacation rentals guy, like at all. I've never been in that conversation. Yeah. The only thing, and that's because I, you know, I come from both worlds. I understand the uniqueness of both, but I'm really hoping this helps the hotel industry kind of wake up and really get creative. I love, like, and I'll mention Marriott again, you know, they created instead of, you know, we're going to go to every city and every state and try to get vacation rentals banned. They create the Homes and Villas program and get all their members, their, you know, millions of members that use Marriott Bonvoy to now start looking for an alternative and to keep their brand relevant. And that's why I'm like, that's what we need. We need a little bit of a shakeup. And yes, that does kind of defeat the purpose of those hotels, but then, you know, Marriott still being in the game. So my thing is like, maybe hotels start getting creative on how they build, how they open, how they, you know, structure an actual property. I love a good example of one that's not like your normal one. There's this company out here in Washington State that is called Lodge, L-O-G-E. And I've been watching these guys for a while, and they buy old motels and they renovate them and flip them and do all these crazy things, but they create like an outdoorsy type of culture. So they have like all these outdoor activities. The goal is not to be in the room, but when you are in the room, it's still cool. You got a bed, a hammock, and all these other like crazy things going on in the room. But they also like are buying these properties that aren't all squished together. They're spaced out kind of like a community of vacation rentals or a community of rooms and cottages and stuff like that. I think that's going to be that's going to be a new norm. And maybe I think we're going to see a new age of hoteliers and like people like my age, you know, 25 or 30, 35 going on to 40s, you know, start looking at this as a really good potential way to, I think, shake things up and keep the industry relevant, because separating the common spaces, but still building that community aspect. And how can we do that? You know, finding commonalities, but attracting people all over the world with many differences that we can, you know, still join that community aspect. So for me, I'm really hoping that, like, yeah, you know, we get more creative on how we move forward and just like build out properties and not even build out, but like use the space that we have. Like vacation rentals, when they're booked, they're booked. There's no, we're at 75% occupancy tonight. You know, we can't say that. The hotels, you can, you know, you have that opportunity. So maybe instead of having a stack of rooms, we have a spread of rooms, and that still gives the opportunity to do a lot more. And I think on the operation side, as a revenue manager, I see way more revenue growth when you have that type of value versus a stack of rooms, you know? Everyone's tired of the kids running upstairs and bouncing basketballs versus, you know, if you have them spread out, you'll have a lot less and there's a little bit more privacy, and I think it gives that vacation rental value to it.
It's a really good point. I didn't think of it that way. Yeah. I think hotels are going to shift. Like I talked with my friend Shane, who looks after food premises with inside airports.
Okay. Yeah.
How would you like to be in that business right now, right?
Yeah,
so he looks after about 150 properties across 150 brands across Australia and Asia. Right. So they're at 10% or 20% revenue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Than what they were in at the start of the year. And he said to me that they're planning for international travel to not come back to 2019 levels till the end of 2023.
Wow.
So even if that's wrong,
yeah,
that number's out there.
Yeah.
They're planning around that. Like, that's scary, which means all the ancillary businesses like hotels, like event spaces, the restaurants that support those hotels, you know, the tour guides, all that stuff.
The catering companies.
Catering companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're in deep shit. Like, they're in deep trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, let's just all hope for a vaccine soon and hope that people can get back to some sort of way of life they want to live again, you know.
That's for sure. Well, and not to drag this on, but I think another thing I on the restaurant side, I want to ask on software,
yeah,
because it's a big topic for us. Again, comes into the topic of overcomplicating things. Like, there's so many softwares out there, and yes, they can do majority of the same features, but there's still not that one that fits one size fits all type, you know, software for like any hotel, whether it's 12,000 rooms or it's 10 little cottages or whatever, that can be applied. And you have all these channel managers and these blah, 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 like plugins that you have to do in order to like just do a simple reservation or a check-in or whatever. I want to know, like, on the hotel side, do you think, or not the hotel side, the restaurant side, I feel like we overcomplicated that on that software like piece. Do you guys have a similar issue?
100%. So, the point of sale companies here are probably a bit more fragmented in Australia than they are in the US, from what I see. But we have largely the same problem. Like, unfortunately, you know, restaurateurs buying what we call legacy systems for, you know, buying point of sale systems for $50,000 to fit out a venue, when I could get them the same quality and same reporting methods for, you know, $200 a month max.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And some iPads. Like, no customer in a restaurant ever has sat there and gone, fuck that point of sale. Sorry to swear.
No, yeah, you're good. You're good.
Like, your point of sale system is on point, sir. Like,
yeah,
I love your point of sale system. No one's sitting there and saying that. So why the hell are you paying so much money for it? And like, the reports are the same, if not worse. So yes, unfortunately that's still happening. It'll change, obviously. You know, brands like Square and Toast are massive and Lightspeed are massive in North America. Here, Lightspeed has taken over a brand called Counter, which is a fantastic acquisition. You know, Square's big. You know, these kind of brands are big. And then I think restaurant and cafe owners will wake up to the fact that they need to think about how they do delivery. You know, how they build out a white label kind of delivery platform, potentially using their own team or potentially using a white label team if someone builds that. I know that America is further along than what we are here. My good friend, Scott Landers from Figure Eight Consulting, is doing amazing work in NYC in regards with, you know, delivery consulting. And so I know that will change. I'm obviously working for a QR menu and payment app, QR menu. Brand called Mr. Yum, which is killing it here in Australia. Over 500 venues will soon come to the US and dominate.
Wow.
And like, they're at 4.5%.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. not 35%. And, you know, so tech is going to play a role in really enhancing the customer experience as long as the training is right with inside the venue and brand.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm excited for that. But like over the last couple of years, there's been too many SaaS brands which have come in and tried to reinvent the wheel for hospitality that didn't need to be reinvented and added on all this BS that didn't need to be there. And their time's ticking because at the moment they can't get subscribers. And so hopefully I could be part of that change in making sure that either I'm either recommending the right people, of which I'm not making recommending many, and or I'm building out my own platforms for the industry, which is probably the long-term goal for me. Yeah,
I was just going to say we should get you, myself, and Josh Copel, who, you know, learned how to code for Flow. We just get us three in a room and see what we can make. Because I'm like, man, we got to have somebody that's going to do this. I'm like, shit, I might have to be that person. I don't know how to do this. Like, we overcomplicate it. We just got to dumb it down. I love that you said, like, reinvent the wheels. Like, we don't need to reinvent something. It just needs to be more simplified, you know? And yeah. I'm not a coder, so I don't understand the back end of that. So maybe I'm just like, need to put my foot in my own mouth. But I just think, you know, it's like, why can't we just make it all plug in at once? Like, just code this to this.
Well, now no code's a thing, right? Which have blown my mind that I've learnt on. And, you know, so maybe that will change the game a bit. And, you know, but if it doesn't save me time and money, what the fuck is the point?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think it, you know, any tech that comes in needs to enhance the experience, whether it be in restaurants or hotels. And it needs to look after the vendor first.
Yeah.
Not the customer first all the time. And with that, you'll get scale of whatever platform you're trying to do. So I'm excited about the changes that will happen.
Yeah. And I think about, like, if you're one of those companies that, you know, is taking care of the vendor first, I think, like, the more you take care of the vendor, the more your business is going to grow. Cause if you're having vendors that are just constantly running out of business and like going out. Yeah. Like, they're just constantly closing, and then it's like, oh, well, a new one will pop up. Yeah. A new one will pop up. But guess how long that one's going to last? 18 months, maybe.
Yes.
Like, so it's like,
yes.
Okay. So why don't, yeah, that's such a great dude. Bravo. I love this episode.
Well, Will, how many vendors have you talked to that say, God, I love Uber Eats?
None.
You know,
none.
Fuck, they look after me.
Yeah.
They don't. No, right?
None. It's just like your comment, like, oh, you have a great property management system, or a great, you know, I love that you guys are just killing it with that software back there. No guest says that. No, like, nobody's, because guess what? It's not.
I love that it seamlessly sent me an email. Like, you know, like, give me a break. Like, you need to make sure that you're looking after your business. I think quite often in any business, we don't think about how our product actually affects the customer. We think about it in business perspective. We think about, if I'm an actual customer of a product, how am I affected by this? Like, do I like this? I don't think we think about that enough. So I think that's the light bulb moment for a lot of vendors that will think about their business in a lot different way, which is great.
I think we just solved the industry's problems on this whole episode, man. We just got to
drop mic.
I love it, dude. I know we got to write a TED talk for this too. This is great. Dude. Well, I think, you know, that's a pretty good note to leave things on from my end. And, you know, obviously I would love to do a second episode, like, sometime in the future. Please. Once some months go down, you know, we see what we've talked about maybe coming to fruition, or maybe we see a different pivot that happened or whatever. I'm excited 100%. To revisit this, but, so thank you so much for, you know, taking this opportunity. Pleasure, and man. Just have like a legit conversation. So I'm excited for all you slick talkers that are listening. You can definitely check out Sean's website, which I will link in the show notes, and then of course all over social media. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you, man. And likewise, all the guys that are listening to this on the Open Pantry podcast. And
yes,
of course, I'm going to link Will up. But this needs to get out to more people. So I'm excited that we're doing this on both our platforms, my friend. So thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for listening. We love your support and want to provide the best we can to all our listeners. So please find us online, social media, and on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast.
What's up, everybody? If you've gotten this far into the episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast, then you are amazing, and thank you so much for tuning in. We want to send you two places really quickly. If you can, check out the show notes and click the hospitality.fm link. Check out all of our other shows on the podcast network. And don't forget, if you have someone that you want to hear on the podcast, then fill out the guest fill out form so that way we can get them on the show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy another episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast.